access number 28668, Mr. Frank Rogers, Rio 6. Now, what happened when you moved into the Kansas line then? What was the situation when you got there?
Well, there was a lot of things, and all temporary camps that there was in the Kansas line. And when we moved in, we had to more or less start from scratch, levelling the ground out for take tents, cook houses, the company office, and all that kind of stuff. And then when we sorted that out, half of us were doing that, and half was up on the Kansas line doing the communications, bunkers and things.
What was the tent camp like you put together? So what was it like when you got it?
Well, it was all with shrubs. What he said, that when they said that it was a camp, I don't think it was a camp for over 12 months or more, because there was nothing there. It was just shrub and...
Did it have a name?
The camp did it. When we all got set up, it was called Salamanca. That was one of the battles of the Essex Regiment.
And so you'd named it yourself?
The regiment.
Now, what about your communications duties? Tell me about them. That was what you were doing if you weren't doing that. What did it involve?
I went on a short course for what they call a lineman, tacking the telephone wires from different bunkers and things like that. And I had that job, and when that was only a short-lived one of the things, and then they grabbed me for winter. I was in the tents and up in the air doing the timber cutting. Beans, I was a carpenter by trade.
So you didn't do the telephone lines for long?
No, this was only on a company's basis, not on the HQ to telephone. They connected the line from company headquarters to the battalion headquarters.
So you were just sort of, And then what about the wood cutting? Tell us about that.
Well, we had to do a bargains with the Yanks, because they'd got up most of the materials and the barbed wire we used to get from them and all. And the timbers we used to have was big balks of timber, probably 9x9 or something like that. And we used to cut them for the aperture of the bunker, so you could put tins and other smaller timbers over the top for protection from mortars and whatever.
So now, where were these bunkers being built? At Salamanca camp?
No, this was just in front of the Comic San.
In front of the what?
Comic San.
What's that?
That's one of the highest mountains in
Italy. How you spell it?
Joe's?
So it's Kamak-San is how you got it. Now, can you describe these bunkers in as much detail as possible? What they were like when you built them?
Well, we had to use explosive to get to break the rock up, so we could get down deep enough to form the bunkers, and that used to be a laugh.
In what way?
We had a corporal of the Royal Engineers to give us details of how to use plastic and detonators, because. It wasn't common knowledge for all of the battalion, but it's a thing you pick up on your travels sort of thing. And of course, after about 2 or 3 weeks, we was left to our own devices. Because if the lads wanted to get a bit more out in an hurry, we used to add to the plastic explosive, and that's how we used to do it. We used to blast everything and then get it out with a pick and shovel. There was no such thing as topsoil or any of that. It was all pure rock. And then the communication trenches, that was a
now, what, so what did you do when you got the stone? Did you put a roof on or what?
You'd have the line the walls out with sandbags and a decent flooring and you cover, and then you camouflage and build up the soil and what have you over the top of it.
And what about heating? Did you have any sort of stove arrangement?
No, but not at that stage, no.
So you were building these.
Yeah.
then what happened? You know, what else were you doing? Communication traces, what about them? You blasted them as well, didn't
you? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had to be sorted out with the digging and making them so there was less conspicuous as possible. Is that the right word?
It sounds right, yeah.
Instead of, look, you can't, with trenches and that, you can't go at right angles to where you're facing, because they can, it's like looking down the street then. You have to go like a zigzag type of thing. And the camouflage netting and all that, it's a work of art. See some of the roads that was done like it.
Were you putting barbed wire up as well?
Yeah.
Tell us about that. How did you put that up?
Well, we had... He was supplied with reinforced gloves at times, and that was shook out on the slopes as a given distance down in the position. Spigots was knocked into the grain, and that was and the barbed wire was attached to that.
Now, these are reserve positions, or are they front?
Well, they was the old reserve positions, but they were the front line of the demarcation that was took up, that decided to me. And this was on the south side of the Imbium.
Now, anything happened? Tell us what life's like while you're doing this.
Well, it's not too bad. It's bad enough, you know. It's just one of them things. We didn't know anything different. It just, you know, took it on, and that was it. Yeah, and if you could wangle a day off by skiving, digging, you know, that you could go into camp. You'd probably go on for teas, picking up material for the year. We used to have the stuff delivered by American helicopters.
This is the construction material, yeah. The wood and the...
Yeah.
Now, so were you actually living in the tents back at Salamanca?
Yeah, because the ceasefires was on then, you see, so there was... The patrols were still going out, like listening patrols, along the Jim River, because they were still trying to, even after the ceasefire, they were still trying, and they're still even trying now with tunnels in North Korea. And we used to do the patrols along the Imjin River.
Now, what were the patrols like? Tell me what a listening patrol was like. In as much detail as you remember, what a typical listening patrol was like?
Well, you'd leave camp just before it got dark, so you was in position to where you want to get before it was actually dark. Listening to different sections, it all marked out that, you know, roughly where you'd likely places where they'd come across the river, and you'd be stretched out along the bank, and you'd be there until dawn, listening to see if anything happened.
And how many would go out?
Well, there's a platoon. You get a platoon from every company, I should imagine. We used to do one section. I don't think it varied from company to company, you know. Well, infantry company, I mean support company, and they were doing different things and HQ. But that's what the sort of setup was. And we was to apprehend, and, you know, anybody that did, in one way or another.
Did you ever see anybody?
When we first got out there, we had to recover a lot of material from the old line, and I was on the hook and 355, and you can see the North Koreans doing the same sort of thing on their side, and you just monitored them and made sure.
I asked you whether you saw anybody.
These were North Korean soldiers.
Didn't actually see anyone on listening patrol then?
Oh, not our section didn't, no.
You didn't actually see anyone when you were out on the listening patrol?
No, but I mean, that's what we was there for. Yeah. I mean, they weren't coming over in droves, they were coming over in dribs and drabs.
You just never happened to see one?
No, not on their section.
And you'd just lie out there all night, would you?
Yeah.
And what would you be armed with?
Myself, I just had a rifle for start off, and then I finished up on the Bren. And everybody, most of them had semi and automatic weapons, but the 303 was the most common one used.
Yeah. Now, tell me about these salvaging. Where was this plate? These are from the old front line.
Yeah.
Tell us about that then.
Well, that was digging out all the soil from the bunkers and dismantling them, so nobody could use them at a further stage if anything started up. That was the theory of it. So, you know, they wasn't going to leave anything any good beyond what they couldn't move, they blew up.
Now, were these areas now in the dematerialised zone?
DMZ.
So, demilitarised. So
yeah.
You were allowed to go into it?
They said they was doing, we were told that everybody got to, them and us, we've got to move 5 miles back from the original line. Whether that was the clearing area. And we told them what we were going to do, and they told us what they were going to do, sort of thing. It was all worked out higher up what the situation was, but we was on 3, 4, 5 and the Hulk dismantling. Well, them positions now are in North Korea there, because actual line has been moved compared with what we thought it was.
Was it difficult getting the stuff out?
Well, it was everything was manhandled down to the hills, down to a track, and then the vehicles picked it up then.
And what did you think of the defensive positions forward all as you went around them?
Well, I thought that was that was primitive, but that was adequate. I mean, for that position, like that, and to defend yourself, it's always a bad thing, isn't it?
You know. What did you think of the terrain?
It was blasted to smithereens on the front lawn area, and there was no wildlife or nothing. It was like a unnatural sound. You didn't get anything, no noise of birds or anything. It was. And you could even smell, when you were digging, the smell of gun, the same smell you get from gunfire and that, in the grain.
That's all cordite smell.
Yeah.
What about the hills?
The Ulk was ever such a prominent place. It was a prime place to occupy, because it commanded the lower grain. A route to go into Seoul and all that, so that's why it was so fought over, lots of times, and changed hands. And 3, 4, 5 was another one that was ill to occupy for its value of them above sea, all sort of thing.
Now, what about the climate? What was the climate like?
In the summer it was tropical, and in the winter it was sub-Arctic weather.
Give us a bit more detail. What was it like in summer? You got there in July, didn't you? That's the summer.
Yeah. We were always stripped to the waist working, and on the thing, but most of us got sunburnt one way or another, and we did have paludrine tablets, salt tablets, took every day. For dehydration and protection. The paludrine was for malaria, but it wasn't a very high risk malaria, but it could have been. We had facilities for washing was very poor, and being in the summer, a lot of us got what they called prickly heat.
How bad was that? You'd had that on the ship, hadn't you?
Yeah, it's like when you don't have the facilities for washing, with your clothes and what have you, or bathing. I mean, that was good facilities on the boat, but you still got it. What else? Tinea. Nearly everybody had that, and that was a sweat rat.
Tinea?
Yeah, running tinea. And you'd have your underpants, cellulose, whatever they used to call them, the sweat between your leg and your testicles, you get this rash, and it was a bit uncomfortable, that was, yeah. And we used to say, what we got today, sort of thing, on the sick bride. And that were the only two things that affected us with, the three things, a bit of getting sunburned, that affected us.
Was there any treatment for tinea?
Oh, yeah, you get cream and that, yeah. And we used to have Nivea cream issued to us for the suntan at the finish.
Well, was there much of a problem with sunburn?
Yeah, there was quite a few lads suffered really bad with it. I think everybody got a marks on the back that left that place. I've got some marks recently I've had skin cancer on my face, but that's, I reckon, you do because you're getting older and your skin texture changes. But everybody had a marks from sunburn.
And were you warned about sunburn?
Oh, yeah. We was told in no way, shape and form that if it would be a self-inflicted wound, as they worded it. And then there was rumours that if anybody did get it bad, they'd be on a charge. You know, if they didn't. There's a set of rules that you wore your wide brim hat at all times. Well, I mean, when you're working, you get that sweaty. You waited till the sergeant major or the platoon sergeant was out of the way and it had come off, but that was up to the individual.
Now, what was it? What about food? What food were you getting? What was the rations?
Pretty good. We was in an Australian brigade, the 28th Brigade, and we was on Australian rations. We was having chicken twice a week, and in them days, that was a luxury. But most of it was tin stuff. Very few fresh stuff.
Not much cooked for you then? Was it cooked?
Yeah, we had
cook it locally or
over, yeah, in the company lounge, yeah. Mm. That's when it used to get messed up with the cooks.
Was it better? Were the Australian rations better than the British rations?
Or? Well, I mean, I was in the 27 Brigade, I think, was nearly all British. I mean, I don't know what they were getting, you know. But it might have been Australian rations all the way down there because of Australia being in the vicinity sort of thing. I don't know.
But did you get enough food?
Yeah, I did. Some people eat more than me, some less.
And what about any other rations? A cigarette ration? Or?
Oh, yeah, we used to get 50 cigarettes a week free issue.
Was that enough for you? Or?
No, I used to run out on a vet 2 days before they were due to be issued again.
So where would you get them from?
We had a local, like a Naffy store. It wasn't called a Naffy. I don't know if it was a PX, like American style thing, but it wasn't called Naffy. And it was only for material. You couldn't get food there or anything like that, but you could get beer and gifts to send home, sort of thing. Yeah.
And what about any other rations? You get beer or rum or a ration of it?
We had rum ration to us in the winter.
Right, we'll perhaps come to that one.
Yeah.
Now, what was a typical day's duty like? So take us through a typical day when you got there in the summer when you're on these jobs.
Yeah.
How would the day start?
Well, the reveille was at 7, I think. And then a cook ace would be a half hour out of that, have your meal, and you'd be on parade 8 o'clock, probably something like that, half hours. Then you'd be detailed to go on fatigues, digging on the hill, or working in the company on the wash ace or in the toilets and stuff like that. And then some would go out on fatigues to other camps, get material for up there, like barbed wire sometimes. Because the Americans, they were delivering stuff for a certain time with the helicopter, and out of that, when the roads got better and the access got better, we used to do it ourselves. Finished work up on the hill about, well, in the summer it would be about 5 hours past. In the winter it was shorter. They even packed it up for a little while because of the weather conditions was that
come
bad.
Back to winter, yeah. But in the summer, so you'd finish about 5:30.
Yeah.
And then what?
Well, if you was unlucky enough to be picked for guard duty, you'd be getting your kit in order to go on guard, and then you'd do your all-night guard through the night, and then pick up again at Revalli in the morning.
Well, two things. What were fatigues, the camp fatigues, like? I mean, you know, if you're on the cookout, what would, say, cookout's fatigues like?
Well...
did you ever do them?
Not cookouts, no.
What did you do?
I was got employed as a carpenter. Well, I was told I was going to do carpentry in the company.
Well, tell us about that, then.
And then there was about six of us in the company. We started scratching around for timber and stuff and canvas and to build a decent wash house and toilets for the company. And that was what was, that was for in the summer, and the Major Macmillan, he had a Jeep that was issued to every company commander, and he thought he ought to have a bit of a garage thing, so he had his garage built at the same time. We had a sort of a beer garden with some temporary seats and things like that. And we also, being that the camp was on the foothills, it was all putting steps in with the spigots, and I've got some photographs of some of that. I'll show you at the end.
So that, you were doing that a lot, were you?
Well, that was the carpentry work didn't come in until after the Christmas. The first part was the initial part was getting the communications advanced up on the hill and things like that. The company details that you got there, that come a bit later, sort of thing. We was putting up with temporary accommodation for things. You know.
So at first it was tents, and,
yeah,
and then later on you were improving.
Yeah.
So you didn't do normal fatigues, so you'd be doing carpentry.
Yeah.
What about guard duties, overnight guard?
Yeah,
what was that like?
Well, I never got used to them, let's put it that way.
What was it like?
Well, it was just something you took for granted, you know. You didn't, got a bit airy sometimes when one or two drunks were getting back to their individual camps. But apart from that, it wasn't too bad. We had the same setup as like you were on a patrol. You'd go around a bigger area than what you would do if you was doing guards in England. Yeah, and you'd link up with other companies, with people that was on stag, so everything was okay.
What about communications with home? Did you get letters, or could you post letters?
Yeah, we
had
airmail letter forms. You know, it's just you fold it up and it makes an envelope, and you had to leave them undone because they was all checked because we was on. Classes on active service at all.
Was it just airmail, or did you have normal letters as well?
I've got normal letters coming from England. Airmail coming from Korea.
And what would you write? What would they write about?
Well, wondering how we was getting on, and you're eating enough, and silly things. Your mum and your old friend at the time used to ask you. It was, and me not being a very educated person, I think I had two versions of letters, and two or three versions of letters, and I used to stagger them. But apart from that, I used to get through all right.
Was it important for you getting letters from home?
Oh, yeah.
Did you
if you were. Didn't get any on, say, 2 or 3 days, and you feel yourself sort of going down a bit. We used to swap letters, sometimes, and they'd say, "I'll read this book, get you back into on the right way of thinking, sort of thing.
Did you have any parcels from home?
Yeah.
What parcels would you get?
I had a cake that was just going rotten from my mother, because I had my 21st birthday in Korea, and when I opened the parcel, she'd made it herself, and it was just, I had to trim it up, because when anybody had anything like that, they always split it up between the lads in the tent. Yeah.
So it was just about 8 months. Anything else in there, or was it just a cake?
Cigarettes, soap. I forget what else there was. Razor blades and stuff like that.
The useful stuff?
Yeah.
Did you get any other parcels, or was that the only one?
That was the only one I can remember. The NAFA used to... you're right, I did have some others. There was a set parcels. You had a £2 parcel, a £3 or a £5 parcel. And they used to be, you'd get them through the NAFI. They ordered them, and then the NAFI sent them out.
Now, did you actually have a canteen, besides this shop, this PX style shop, did you have a NAFI canteen or some sort of canteen when you were there?
No. You might get one in the battalion, but not in an individual camp.
So, what happens next thing? You're out there in the summer, you arrive in July-ish. So what happens? What's the next thing you remember? You're just working on this.
Yeah.
And then what... What do you remember happening? Any incident?
Well, the only other incident I had my appendix ate it, and I went to...
did that happen? In the winter?
Yeah, in February.
No, that's even after the winter almost.
No, it's still winter. I see what you mean, yeah. You want it more like before the winter.
Well, yeah, just what happens, you know?
Well, it was a routine of doing patrols, guards, and making the conditions in the company lines more bearable, sort of thing. And it was that routine. It was unbelievable. And New Year's Eve.
Now hang on, we've got winter before. Yeah. We've got the monsoon before. Was there a monsoon there?
Yeah, there was that. They come up. When was that? That was about August, I think. August, September.
So a couple of months after you got there.
Yeah.
Now what was the monsoon like?
Well, I've never witnessed anything like it. When it rains, when they call it stair rods, that's what it is. It's really the conditions to the road, being that it was all shale, they were washed out, and nobody was allowed to use the roads other than ambulance and emergency services of sorts. Nobody used to be able to go out. Well, they didn't go anywhere. It was all army stuff. But I mean, it was the traffic was cut down immensely until the water went. You know, got the water subsided.
Is there a problem with flooding? Localized flooding, or
not where we were. We was on high ground compared. What water we did get into our tents soon drained away. You know.
How long did it last for?
I can't remember now. Had a fortnight, a week, fortnight, something like that.
So not long.
Not as I can remember, no.
Well,